Hey gang, we all know Spotify has become the ultimate app destination for music lovers. I have an account and I love it. I find new music by following Tastemaker playlists, and I make my own playlist that I share featuring music from guests that have been on the show. But did you know that aside from millions of songs, Spotify now has all of your favorite podcasts, including How Did I Get Here? Yes, all of your podcasts are available on Spotify. Just go to Spotify.com or download the app from your app store, and don't forget to follow How Did I Get Here? That's Spotify. Millions of songs, thousands of podcasts. Let's get down. Attention Austin musicians and music industry professionals, are you having a difficult time navigating these tricky waters? Well, the Austin Music Foundation is here to help you. The Austin Music Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to strengthening and connecting the local music community with innovative programs that empower musicians, music industry professionals, and music businesses within Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to help the Austin music industry succeed. Now look, ever since COVID took over last year, everything's moved online. The consultations are online. They're at no cost to the artist or to the music industry professional. Just go to austinmusicfoundation.org. That's austinmusicfoundation.org to find out how they can help you. Austin Music Foundation is here to help. Let's get down.
How did I get here? And now here is your host, John Holly.
All right, hello, I'm Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. Hope you guys all had a good long weekend. It's a long weekend for a lot of people. I had a good weekend. I actually went to Houston last Thursday and hung out with my Aunt Olga and my grandma. And got to see my old friend Craig after over a year of not seeing him. One of my best friends in the world. We've been friends since we were in junior high. So we sat in the backyard, talked about stuff, had some beers. Just shot the shit, man. It was great just being with friends again. This whole vaccinated lifestyle thing is amazing. So then Friday I played a show in Houston, opening for my friends Brandon Temple and James Robinson in Temple Underground. And ADH Project, who were just on the show at Rockefeller's in Houston. It was fucking great, man. It was so fun. It was a short set, but it was fantastic getting out in front of people, playing a show at a place that I've been going to since I was a little kid, since the 70s. My mom took me there for the first time to Rockefeller's. And I saw amazing shows there. I saw Dr. John, Neville Brothers. Got to hang out with Dr. John there for a little while one night. Amazing. I was too young to really understand what I was doing, but it was like, I was like maybe 19 or something. Anyway, it was a great show. It was really fun playing that place. It was great getting to hang out with James Robinson and with Brandon Temple, and really getting to hang out with ADH Project, AD Hernandez, and the great Curtis Lee, who I'm going to try and get on the show here pretty soon. So that was, it was a good weekend all around. Hopefully you guys had a good weekend. Gang, I have a great show for you today. Songwriter and singer, musician, Chase Frank is on the show. He's got a brand new single out called The Big Blue, and dual single, sorry, and The Only You, which is an instrumental version of The Big Blue. And she is joined by her producer, multi-instrumentalist Joseph Woolard, who you might remember from when he was on the show last year with Hard Proof. Joseph Woolard also plays with Black Joe Lewis and Golden Dawn Orchestra. Chase and Joe and I, and Joseph and I, have a great conversation. Chase started out on cello and ended up playing piano, and she stayed with strings. She was raised in Long Beach, California. She ended up doing a lot of events, being an event coordinator and talent buyer in Southern California. Has a great story about an evening with Allen Ginsberg. She also has another band called The Harms, who's just released a single called Hysterico. So you can check them out. You can go to chasefrankmusic.com to connect with all of her musical things and check out this gorgeous new song, The Big Blue, and of course, The Only You, produced by the great Joseph Woolard. So without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Chase Frank and Joseph Woolard. Let's get down.
Ah!
is is that a painting or like a
yeah
that is it's fantastic.
It's a yeah. Actually, let me.
Is it from the 70s?
No, it's from a good for. Hang on, I'm going to show you better. That wasn't good. Me, I'm not that good at Zoom, obviously. It's called "Would You Miss Me If I Didn't Exist?" And it's by my good friend Carol Powell, who's a Los Angeles artist that does like multimedia applique and a lot of, you know, plush stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah, isn't that, it amazing?
Yeah, it looks beautiful,
Carol
even just on
Powell.
Zoom. Wow.
I know. It's just I meditate on this almost every day. It's just such a beautiful piece and so meaningful. It has a lot of little words, like very reminiscent of kind of the, you know, the aughts and the not 2000 or the 90s, like where there was a lot of mixed text.
Yeah.
And messages.
Yeah.
And paintings, you know?
Yeah.
I like that part.
That's interesting that you say that. I have an ex-wife that she went through a phase. She's an artist. She did a lot of album covers and videos and stuff, and there was a lot of that going on.
Very popular, yeah. Yeah.
It was a movement.
Poetry and art.
Yeah.
It was.
You,
I was living in Long Beach. It was very popular, yeah.
Yeah, were you in the poetry world? I saw that you produced an evening with Allen Ginsberg?
That was my first big production, and it was so romantic because I was so obsessed with his writing, you know? And then I did this big festival in Long Beach called When Words Collide,
uh-huh.
And it was a citywide spoken word festival that was every weekend for a month. So
wow.
We would have these amazing pop-up, you know, emerging artists, but then really well-known artists as well. I mean, crossover was my thing. Like, so I had Patti Smith and, you know, Laurie Anderson and Richie Havens and people that were like poets,
wow.
But they were singing
rock
it.
Rock stars,
you know?
yeah.
And I mean, the Watts Prophets and, you know, just some of my biggest, it was very personal. Because I was like just seeing a bunch of people that I wanted to see, and it was almost easier to just put them all together and share it.
Right. So I'm getting the sense that you kind of came up in like a classical art. You know, you played cello. How old were you when you started playing cello?
I was in fourth grade. So whatever the age that is.
How'd your hands even fit around the thing?
They didn't.
It's bigger than you.
It was like my most traumatic. I lived like in the ghetto and in North Long Beach. And my most traumatic event was walking home with the cello. Like it was scary. And it was also bigger than me. So
yeah.
I would be like, you know, and I finally bumped the cello neck and it came apart, and I like was just weeping. I thought I broke my cello, but then I learned that that was normal, you know.
Yeah.
They glue it back on, right, Joe?
Well, I mean, you definitely want it to just like come off cleanly rather than like snap in an awkward spot,
right?
Then right,
splintering.
That was
yeah.
Playing in the children's orchestra, though, it's true that they had to give me a small size, of course, you know, but I was just like third chair, and playing in the orchestra, it was my first team sport with music, you know?
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. And Joe, did you come up in that same sort of thing?
Well, not the same kind of thing, but I played in band all through school, you know, did a lot of the all state things and all that, you know, it's so long ago. I started on alto sax and eventually just started adding instruments. I switched to tenor. And then I think next I started playing flute. And actually, I was playing guitar and drums somewhat at that
right.
point, you know, as kids do.
Like everyone.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Then started working on piano a little bit for, you know, you know, theory lab and stuff like that. And, you know, and bass clarinet. And actually, I do a lot of touring these days, or you know, in the days when we tour. In the before times. I do a lot on baritone sax, and that was actually kind of the most recent instrument that I started playing, you know?
Which is what you're most known for. It's so ironic.
I think you're a badass flute player or flautist. What do you say? What do you prefer? Flute player or flautist?
I love the flute. Flute, flautist, whatever. Okay. It doesn't matter.
What about flutist?
It's the one that was initially the most challenging, I think. It took a long time before I felt halfway decent on that instrument.
Right.
And, you know, as I said, like I switched to baritone sax and instantly started doing a lot of touring, and I played a lot of flute with Akote soul sounds.
Okay.
So that was actually my first like professional touring gig.
So but, did Adrian Quesada really put you on flute in that band, or was it like what you heard, or?
No, it was Martine. Martine Perrin.
Okay, put you on
flute. Yeah, the two of them started the project, and it was really just the two of them playing everything. You know, and Martine Perna, leader, co-founder of Antibalas, plays baritone sax and flute. And we met doing this this group called Buscando el Monte, which was kind of a it was based on comparsa bands, which are street bands that have percussion and horns. So we had a horn section and you know, congas, percussionists, all that kind of thing, and the idea was to be kind of a you know, no rhythm instruments, but drums and horns and all that. But so
basically Martine,
Martine was the one that kind of organized that, and then like instantly had to split. He's kind of like a Johnny Appleseed with that kind of thing. So
yeah,
but he found out that I played flute, and he's like, "Cool, you play flute? Awesome!
You play flute."
He's like, "You play baritone sax?" It's like, "Yeah. I just got a horn, you know, got my dad's horn refurbished." And he's like, "Cool. Do you sing any background vocals?" It's like, "Yeah, when I'm forced to, like everyone." But you know. Ended up touring with them.
Yeah. Let me ask you guys a question really fast. Was your MyKUTX this last weekend?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So check this out. So I'm playing this gig on Saturday, and I guess we'd already loaded in, done soundcheck. So we're back for the gig, and our bass player, Corey Glazer, comes walking up and says, "Oh man, I was just listening to MyKUTX and they were playing some badass music."
So yes.
I didn't hear it, but now I just put two and two together.
That was such a fun set. Yeah. You know, it was one of those things. I love DJing. Joe has probably DJed as well. We didn't even talk about that, but we listen to music, you know? I mean, that is our language. So we had a hard time narrowing that down to 1 hour because we were just like, my gosh, it was easy and it was fun. And I really was, after listening back to it, I was really surprised at the set. I feel like it was a real banger.
That's what Corey was saying. So I don't know what the hell, like, you guys played, man, but it was good.
Gosh, what didn't we put? We played everything from Aretha to you know, Farside, Bobby Gentry, but there's a fluidity to, these are all inspirations for us. So the fluidity to it was the tone and the messaging, you know, that's, as a songwriter, all those people were really inspired to me. But then as a composer, Joe and I meet at that intersection where it's like social justice music, but you don't have to hit people over the head with your message.
Right.
You just need to tell the story. The stories are their own message. You know, when I started writing, even when I was like 14, I understood the difference between preaching and just tell the story. The story is the moral. And I mean, I hear the difference now in music today, and I hear a lot of people talking down to people, but this is what compelled me to listen to Bobby Gentry. See, you opened up a Pandora's box, sorry. But Bobby Gentry would, you know, just tell the story that she heard, even though that song Fancy was based on a character in a Stephen King novel. She saw the, you know, white trash to riches story as a fascinating and relatable subject, you know?
Right. I have no idea what you're talking about, though.
The song Fancy by Bobby Gentry is one that we played on Saturday.
Okay.
And it's about, it's like a Southern goth vibe, and, you know, very much like a song that, you know, Johnny Cash would have written,
or right
any of the great, you know, telling these stories, right? And that's always, it was like easier to become a songwriter than a novelist for me.
right.
I thought, I could be wrong.
So let's talk about this song, This Big Blue. It's great.
Did you get to hear it?
Yes, I did. Quite a few times. Talk to me about how did you guys write it together, or how did that come about? Because it's a little bit different than
that. Mystery has already been apparently we're a songwriting team. Okay, let me start over. The song was written by me and produced by Joe, and the song was something that I've been holding on to, if you will. We all have those songs that are like, this is personal, you know? Yeah. When I left Long Beach over 12 years ago, I had hit that wall where I feel like I couldn't grow. And that's what the song Spark was. But when we write songs, most of us, a spark is one thing and then the story becomes bigger, you know?
Yeah.
That's kind of the short answer. And after meeting Joe and hanging out with him and playing with him for over 10 years, I mean, knowing him for over 10 years and then recently more playing with him, I just realized really what it was is that Ike Owens said to me, you're going to make a record one day and it's going to be flute and guitar and everyone's going to hear you and your message. And I was like, whoa. And Gil Scott-Heron had just died and we were listening to Winter in America when he said that, and I just got chills. Like, I don't play acoustic guitar, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden when we were making this song happen, I was like, oh my gosh, Ike was right, you know?
Yeah.
Ike Owens, a good friend and producer that passed away in 2014, unfortunately, on tour with Jack White, you know, died of a heart attack. But my point is that people like that influence you and are with you always. And in the back of my head, I was like, we're doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So how did you guys meet?
I think it was through Hard Proof, right?
Yeah. I was booking a show and I saw you guys and I'm like, well, shit, this is my new favorite thing. I had already heard Afrobeat in LA, but not like your flavor. Tell
some
about it, Joe.
Yeah, I mean, you know, back then it was still just kind of, you know, a surprise to encounter anything like Afrobeat in Texas, I guess, Texas, you know. Yeah. I mean, not that it's like, you know, just all over the place now or anything, but, you know.
Right. Well, you know, Afrobeat anywhere, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. The guy I mentioned, Martin Perna, who I worked with in Akote Soul Sounds, I eventually ended up playing with him in Antibalas, which was, you know, they're kind of the pinnacle of post Fela Kuti Afrobeat bands. So yeah. I was a huge fan of them. Ended up playing with the band, but lots of twists and turns along the way, obviously.
Right. All right. So did you play Joe this song? Is that like, how did you guys connect on this tune?
Yeah. Like she's had this song for a long time, right. And it's one that like a lot of me included, a lot of her friends have wanted her to do, as she mentioned, but
right.
You know, I understand the thing of not wanting to do a song until it's right.
Right.
And so you have the right ensemble too.
Yeah, absolutely. And we totally did. It's funny, like the pandemic totally delayed things by almost exactly a year.
Right.
You know, like we were at the point where we would have started doing all these things, you know, it would be about this time that things would be coming out.
Oh, so the song was finished a little over a year ago.
Almost.
Okay. 90%. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, we didn't have the lead vocals and we didn't have certain things.
Right.
But, you know, with all the challenges of that year, there were various reasons why it didn't get done. And also, I felt like the song was changing. Like, songs are alive. And, you know, I don't know if it's like Nick Cave said this once. As soon as you record it, it's over and it's like this release, you know,
yeah.
or you're just, it's a version that is finite.
Right.
So I watched all these things happening around the world and I was like, this is historic. As a songwriter, this song really took on new meaning, if you will.
Right.
So I feel like it was just the right time, you know? And then the instrumental version was born out of those newsreel swarming around in my head, just listening to history being made, good or bad.
Right.
You know, it's right. Still history.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we had so much time to listen and reflect and, you know, while we're dealing with adversity and
right.
all this other stuff. And, you know, it enriched the music. I'm sure you've talked to other musicians about this, how making music during the pandemic has been such a weird experience.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's like you're putting things out into the void,
yeah.
you know, and, yes. and you can't, you know, you can get some likes, some thumbs ups, you know, things
right.
like that, but you don't get to feel the impact of what
Anything.
You're doing.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know, I'm kind of glad that I've had enough live music going on to kind of do some of that, but obviously it's not the same and it pales in comparison. But we didn't stop being musicians because of it, you know, just
no.
because of
yeah,
not
yeah.
being able to perform and entertain.
Right.
So,
in fact, sometimes limitations change things in a positive way.
Absolutely.
For example, this, I was planning to do a whole record and this was one single. And I realized that I not only couldn't do that for various, you know, technical hardships and distance and safety, but I knew that I could put that energy into one song. And I think it upped the ante on the song, definitely, and made me appreciate every single person on the song. Because, I mean, we've talked about this before, but it's kind of a family affair. A few friends from Long Beach and Los Angeles are on it. My friends in Austin are on it. Some of my favorite musicians, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that I just feel like it made the song bigger and more powerful. And I guess sometimes you don't realize that, you know, as you're doing it, but then the feedback, like Joe mentioned, you know, you just don't know what a song is. You're no longer objective.
Right,
so when you
right.
hear it in the world, people tell you what it is
right.
and you
yeah.
just have to believe them.
I want to point out too, that in normal times, both of us are way too busy with all the other things that we're doing too.
Right.
Chase has a band called The Harms.
Yeah, I checked them out too.
You know, and she had another single that she was working on with them, which she also just released recently. And
right.
you know, from, I obviously have a lot of things going on at all times.
So much of boombox and,
you know, so
Lewis, yeah.
I've gotten used to like doing mixes by email and stuff like that. But it was great not having to be on the road and balance.
Right.
All
be able
this.
To I focus. Just, right.
Yeah. Yeah. I could actually do a producer role for Chase rather than just kind of dropping in every once in a while.
Was that kind of the impetus to do the other version, the only you?
For me, it was to highlight, for me, the way the conversation started was I want to highlight the musicians on the record. And when you take out my voice, it's just a whole complete song. And we didn't really realize it until we heard it, you know.
It got so thick.
And heard on keys and heard the clavinet and her. I mean, it was just so thick. Yeah, like Joe said. That's partly due to Joe's production and arrangement sensibilities. This song would be very different without his guidance, and you know, he wrote many of the beds for the song. So what people think is a baritone sax is actually a bass clarinet bed, and it's like three bass clarinets playing at the same time that emulates cello, which we both like as a tone. So that came into play and made sense. But I wouldn't have done that without Joe, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right. That's why we get
very
producers.
Different.
Yeah. And where did you guys
do it? Absolutely. All of it was recorded at Gary Delgado's home studio, except for another section, the vocals, which we did. I don't even know if there's a name for that studio, Jeff.
Yeah, there's not even a bathroom at that studio, so it probably doesn't have a name. It's a nice studio. It's just unfinished.
It's a work in progress. So basically, it was a home studio recording that we chopped. It was a lot of phone mixing. I ended up on the phone with Gary Delgado quite a bit.
We had a lot of these three-way phone calls where we're, you know, listening to parts and going to timestamps and
in real,
you know, not the most optimal way to be able to do it, but you know, we did it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's got to be like a the way that you're explaining this right now made me think that there's got to be some overarching lesson learned in the way that we make music over the last year. And I guess it's like the lesson is you can't stop it.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
The lesson is there's obstacles. It's like Allen Ginsberg said to me when I met him, obstacles are everywhere. Learn to overcome them. And if you don't, you will give up. Like there's a lot of people I know this year that quit music. And I'm not looking down on them or, you know, saying anything. I just know how hard this is in this world that we live in to put out sincere material, for example. It's like, you know, noise, bling, push, what's your angle? And I don't feel any of those things. I'm just still just trying to be sincere and long-winded. I saw you looking at that clock. My answers are too long.
I was looking at the clock for time. What is wrong with you?
I'm teasing.
Now you put me on the spot, Chase.
You don't know me, man.
Yeah,
I like to give
you're a
ball
buster.
Hard time. I am.
I wish I had more soup to eat to take advantage of the
what's the equivalent of that when you do it to a woman? If you say ball buster, what's it when guys do it?
Ovary buster?
Yeah. You're a real ovary buster. I need the female version of that. Because I've heard that all my life. In the music industry, it's very male dominated too.
Yes, it is.
When I meet someone such as Joseph Woolard, who is looking at people equally, I glob onto them because I feel like that screen, that filter that happens when we meet each other is so immediate, you know?
Yeah.
And in music, those things don't happen because when you hear someone play and say you haven't met them, you think, oh, immediately you're like, okay, is he black? Is he white? Is he? I mean, this is our bias that society puts on us. I don't feel those things when I play music with people. And that's amazing. Music is the freest place that I experience in life.
It is.
Where we transcend, and you speak to musicians all day with your awesome podcast, by the way. And I really feel like you probably have heard this before.
Well, I've experienced it too. I mean,
Yeah, you're a musician.
There's a thing that I read in, have you guys read the Kathy Valentine book? She wrote a book. She put it out last year. It's amazing. It's amazing. She's the bass player for the Go-Go's, but she also is a songwriter and lives here in town.
I have not read it. I'd like to.
It's fantastic. But there's a thing that she talks about being in this scene here, like in the 70s, late 70s. And just kind of like there was never like a guitar teacher would be like, well, you can't like, you know, back then they'd be like, you know, well, you can't play electric guitar. You're a girl. You know, you play acoustic guitar and play in a coffee shop. You don't get on stage and, you know, rock out, which you do, Chase. And in the book, she basically explains that there's sexism all over the industry, except for with the musician family. Like there, you're just accepted for who you are. It's been like that with the race, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
We are lucky that it transcends, you know, that.
Yeah.
I'll just leave it.
The only thing you can't do in our community is suck.
My whole life, you can't. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what color you are, what sex you are, does not matter. As long as you don't suck, you're all right.
Yep.
Austin's very accepting of people that take their craft seriously.
Yeah.
I agree. And I like that about our community. You know, you don't have to like the music, but you respect the effort.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree. It's like, I don't listen to country all day, but you know I love a good country song.
Right. Right. Let me ask you this. What did bring you to Austin from the Southern California zone?
My boyfriend's from El Paso, Alberto Carrasco. He's originally from El Paso, and I met him over there. And he said, you know, you would like Austin, right? And I had not toured here yet. I was really touring a lot on the West Coast. And I was ready to leave. So it was a combination of things. Once I saw the music scene here, and I played my first South by Southwest in 2008 and got a write-up that day. And I was like, what just happened? Because I've heard all the stories of you'll never get written up. You'll be just like in this sea of musicians. And I'm like, no, I'm good. You know, talking shit. But I do feel like it was just meant to be. It was just meant to be, you know, I came. My boyfriend had already lived here in the 90s and loved, you know, his experience. He's a social worker. So it was all the things, the live venues, the music scene, the actual hardworking musician that took it seriously, all of those things. I'm sure that lots of people felt when I came, just like that wave was like, you know, don't move here. But I was like, I'm coming from a place where everyone from everywhere moves there all the time. I just didn't listen, you know? Like California, it's like everyone comes to California.
Yeah. It's funny.
It's an international place.
Yeah. My girlfriend moved here from California 3 years ago, and she still has her California plates. And she was like, I got to change them because you don't understand. Yeah. Like people like honk at me and then pull it, like, you know, flip me off tell me to go back to California. Oh, yeah. I was like, really? Like,
I'm sure they do, man.
But the thing is really? There's like 17 people that were actually born and raised here. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, that's the irony. None of us are really from here.
Exactly.
I mean, but you got to admit, California plates is a thing.
Yeah.
I actually use that phrase as shorthand. And it's not
tomatoes. expect tomatoes.
You know, I mean, like, look at that California plates over there. Yeah. You know, you could just tell them because they're acting like they're still in California, making Austin more like California. And, you that know, sucks. I don't know. It ain't California,
man. I get that sentiment, but I don't agree with, I think some people that claim ownership of Austin are, as Joe said, not from here.
Yeah, like, no, so like funny, most of, you know? Most of us aren't from here.
Right.
My daughter is from Austin.
Exactly. You're like, wait a minute, where are you from? I'm from New York. Okay, shut up. You know what I mean? Well, this is the thing, and this is where, you know, I get the sentiment, but it's like, Austin is an international town, artistically, musically. There's lots of other things going on here as well.
It tries to be.
It's still going to be,
that,
you know, you can't go back.
Yeah. No, you can't. That's the thing is you can't go back.
And
you just need to make a better plan for the future. And please, that's what is disappointing because we have a lot of areas that need some work in Austin. Like, you know, we need... Yeah, seriously. I mean, we need some public transportation. We need some actual support of the entertainment structures that keep the city afloat. You know, we need some put up instead, you know, put up or shut up, you know?
Yeah.
Whether it's from California plates or not, you know, I don't care where you're from. Just like, you know, go to shows, support things. I mean, it's obviously been complicated by the coronavirus, but... You know, we got to build it up the way we want it, you know, and it can't just be.
Well, that's one thing that's naturally, I mean, organically happening a little bit through the pandemic. It's, I mean, not everything you want to survive, survive. But there's
never does.
People pull together in a way that is unique in Austin. And I love that. I saw it during the ice storm.
I've seen
a lot. I mean, the community in Austin cares, and I'm not saying that in a trite way. Of course we could do more, but just like the Dawa Fund, I mean, I'm a huge fan of what Shaka is doing with that and putting money back into
the
Black community that's given the Black community specifically that's given so much to this town.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's the story across America right now is like, you know, you can't steal everything the Black culture has and then just pretend that didn't happen. You know, hip hop and fashion. I mean, there's so much for me personally that I've gleaned from being around Black culture that it's something I preach about a lot or speak about a lot when I speak to people because it's an influence, you know.
Right.
And I just don't think people realize how much sometimes.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because last summer, or whenever we talked before, Joe, with Hardproof, it was in the wake of the murder of George Floyd and all that stuff. There were protests. It seemed like actual change was being enacted. Now, almost a year later, where do you think that it's still going in the right direction, or it's slowed down, or stopped being the main thing everyone was talking about?
You know, it seems, you know, we're on the right road. It's hard to say if we're always going in the right direction. It seems like we take some steps forward and take some steps back. But there was definitely a change in awareness that I would say is a necessary step forward.
Yeah.
And a lot of kind of pain that, you know, is not going to be resolved in just the outcome of one case or, you know, this is sadly, it's part of the point that was being made is that this is systemic.
Right. Right.
You know, and this isn't just a thing that you can blame on a bad apple or whatever. If you want to do that, then it's let's talk about America being like a whole rotten bushel of apples.
That's
even more pessimistic. Seriously. than addressing the issues of systemic failures,
yeah,
because it's broader than just race even.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a case in Loveland, Colorado, a couple of days ago. Real tiny little town, elderly lady who was suffering from dementia, got, you know, brutalized by some cop for taking like maybe $14 worth of stuff from a Walmart. You know?
Are you serious? Oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this isn't the kind of place where they can even claim that, you know, that they had to be that tense. Right, as right, law exactly. enforcers,
right,
you know. So once we know that there's this abuse of power, what are we going to call it? You know, it's systemic to me is like the least offensive way that we can start addressing it.
Yeah.
Because it's not just race. It's about dealing with mental illness.
Yeah.
It's about making a culture that's less violent in general.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't be so desensitized to this violence to the point that someone, a peace officer, could possibly think that beating up an elderly woman was going to be okay.
Right.
You know, what you just said is everything. It's part of what this song's about. It's about zooming out and really thinking about what is acceptable to you. You know, and I feel like it's the same what we're talking about with equality, period, whether it's for women or people of color. It's about responsibility, personal responsibility, and knowing that you can't make a systemic change with a few people. It's our actions. And this is a heavy burden to me. If you're human, you have to act right. And if you don't act right, that's what you get. You know what I mean? So, I mean, that sounds really simple and preschool, but I kind of feel like we need to go back to that.
Yeah.
In my observation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Civility, whatever you want to call it.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can't get right until we start acting right.
That's right.
You know, and I say it like Joe and I, when we... You know, we have healthy arguments. We're friends. We have healthy arguments about things. Sometimes we don't agree. The next day, there's no issue. And that's another thing with musicians. There's that you're used to working things out.
Right.
You have to work it out because the song has to be played.
Right.
So that's the kind of mentality where I feel like, man, things seem like they're harder than they are sometimes, you know. But when you're in music and you're like, as you know, John, you get in the studio, this has to be out today. Okay. This is how much money we have. This is how much time we have. We're doing this today.
Yeah.
There's no, you know, your ego doesn't fit in that equation, right?
Right, right.
It's like someone has to not soak up all the time playing their part so we can get all the rest of the parts recorded.
Right. working towards a greater good where the song is the greater good. Everyone's just trying to make the song good, not trying to have their voice heard.
Something yep. magical yeah. about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I love it.
There should be
teamwork.
Teamwork.
It makes the dream work.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Had to.
So this will be coming out a couple weeks after the songs are available. Are you guys going to do some kind of show or something?
Yes, I'm working on that right now. Basically putting like a chamber ensemble together for this and other songs that are in the same basket that we haven't really played yet, you know? So yes. And I'll keep you posted.
Where do you wish to do perform this sort of thing?
We're debating whether to do a live stream like at Buds or do a show.
Yeah.
And maybe, you know, I don't know yet. I don't want to say
that Bud stuff. I saw Motenko did some stuff there. It sounds great. Looks great. That's where my girlfriend cuts hair job. Right in that little area. There's like some places behind there.
I need my haircut.
Yeah. I'm her pimp. Her hair cutting pimp.
Yeah. Watch out, man. That was a big difference when you added hair cutting.
it's a different vibe. Let me ask you quickly about the Harms. Who's your partner in crime in that band?
Her name is Rachel Allred. She plays bass.
Yes,
and
it's cool.
She also co-writes, and I really love the type of approach she brought to the horns, because she's very methodical in a lot of ways, and that's cool.
Like it's a bass player.
Yeah, like she should be. I mean, we could go into a whole thing. But yeah, so we just released Hysterico,
right?
Which was produced by Stuart Sykes, which
cool
he's
guy,
one of my favorite,
yeah,
ever to yeah. work with. He's a genius and self-contained. He needs no help ever. He just like set it up, recorded it, mixed it. He's that guy. So we function kind of as a duo with backing help. You know, people change their careers during the pandemic. So we lost our drummer, stuff like that. But we just keep, we're pressing forward right now, trying to get this full length done. And we're just working with the situation that the world is in.
Yeah. It sounds like Gizmo the Gremlin is at one of y'all's houses.
Yeah,
is that your
this is
what are you hearing?
This is one of my cats that okay. knows that I'm on a podcast right now, and she's complaining
wants to be
about
a star.
It.
I don't yeah. hear it. What it sound like?
So yeah, dope. Maybe it'll be a live stream. Maybe you'll do it at a place. You think? Are you feeling all right
yeah,
going out and playing
to,
shows?
It depends on the venue, but yeah. like Far Out Lounge is doing a good job. They're doing a great job at handling, you know, safety.
Yeah.
And we love Sean on sound. So, yeah, there's a couple options. It's definitely in progress. And I'm sorry I don't have a date for you.
That's all right.
Until you really want. Where are you playing at these days?
I'm actually Sean? Doing a show at 310, but at the end of June.
Oh, word.
At did you just look at your
today?
Clock?
Did you say 310 like today?
No.
He's
like,
talking about the venue.
310, the venue.
The venue.
I'm like, what's
happening? Yeah.
Okay. I haven't even
it's
been
it's the side
there.
Venue, the ACL.
It's good.
It's great.
Yeah, I've done, I'm yeah, in this band Skyrocket, and we've played there a few times. I actually go there, and I work with Austin Music Foundation. We've had a shitload of events there. I really like it a lot.
Wonderful.
It's cool. It has a cool LED
well,
screen.
That's good to hear that the yeah. sound is good, and you know.
Yeah, it's pretty top notch. It's like the B room for the Moody Theater, like
wonderful.
the fix and like and people like that play there. Like not all the way filling yeah. up the big room, but like still out playing
that's
for sad old guys that still want to play shows.
It's an intimate venue, which is neat. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not huge.
But I've enjoyed. I've gone to Far Out a couple times. I'm
Why
actually
don't
going
you,
Wednesday.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
No, I love everything Lawrence does, his booking and what he puts together.
Yeah.
Why don't you get us a show at the 310?
Because I don't book it.
I know, but you told me the guy who does.
I do know the guy who does. Well, you guys should know that we should all know each other. That's one of my goals with the Austin Music Foundation is making sure that the fact is, there's a funny thing that happened a couple years ago. I put out this EP and I hired a publicist, which is a thing that people should do, but which people yeah. shouldn't do. Obviously yours, Ryan Romano, is a great guy, and I've actually had him
they're
on the show.
Like
I like no, they're not all like him. But
yeah.
it turned out that no. my relationships with people in this town since I've been living here since 1991. I lived here when I was a teenager, and I've been in music the whole time, that my relationships with everyone, I doubted my own strength of my relationships. And it,
wow.
and like
wow.
the publicist would email Jody Denberg, and Jody Denberg would email me back. And then after I went through
right.
that process, I was like, oh, you know, that
I'm that guy.
Well, there is something special in the size of our town, and everyone's reachable.
Yeah.
You know, I like it when publicists reach out
everyone's
to me, but I also love it when a band reaches out to me and is like, hey, you know, I don't know you, but, you know, whatever. Anyway.
I should have, but now I know. But I understand what you mean about, like, a lot of people are very approachable and will help you. I agree.
Yeah.
You have to ask, though, you know?
And people
so
are more willing to help
about
someone
310.
That they're.
I'm all hammering away.
Hammering
so,
away.
So, well, it's true that, you know, one of the reasons I went back to my solo thing in this time is, I don't know how to say this, but there's no frame there. It's whatever I want it to be.
Right.
And I feel like my songs that I write for my solo thing are like pulled out of my gut and the most sincere I could possibly muster up.
Right.
I want to go back to that. And it's terrifying. You know, when you're doing that stuff and it's just like your life message in a song, it's scary. Yeah. And it's not because you're thinking, do people like it? It's more like the legacy thing, you know? So I'm excited to be back in the zone on my solo stuff, feel it and play, want to play. I just love playing in a band. So that's like a band. So that's part of what, you know, is difficult about being a solo artist. You drive everything by yourself, you know?
Right.
And I'm okay with that now because I feel more confident about, you know, like I have certain limitations. I have PTSD. Sure. I have challenges in my life like we all do. You work within those parameters and you make it work. And that's special, you know?
Yeah.
What you put out to the world is your voice and your art, and there's no one like you.
That's in your you're the only you in this big blue.
Correct.
I wrote that down because I loved that.
I like it too, and as an identical twin, it means a lot to me, you know. People, when you're a twin, want you to be the same people, and they're constantly just, oh, that's what she does, that's what she, you know. Right. They're seeing, oh, you're one person. It's not true.
You're an identical
DNA
twin?
DNA-wise, I am.
Where is your twin?
She's in Austin now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She's actually was primarily a dancer most of her life.
Okay. Still mm-hmm. in the arts, though. That's cool.
Yeah.
I had a girlfriend that was an identical twin. Has an identical twin.
You know
twin.
How weird it is then.
Yeah. Well, they would go to like Twinorama or whatever, like the Comic-Con for twins.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There's such a thing. It's like, what is it called? It's like Twin,
yeah. Oh, I know.
Twin Fest or something like that.
Yeah. I've been invited.
Oh, I don't doubt it.
Yeah. That just sounds like weird. She would say that to me and I'd be like, that sounds like a place where like fetishists would go to like watch twins.
I don't even want to tell you the things people have said to me as a twin.
Me neither.
It's just disgusting.
Me neither.
It's really sad.
Yeah. Yeah. People would say that shit to me all the time. And I would be like, oh, do you want to do that with your brother? You creep.
Yeah, exactly.
Ew.
Yeah, that's super gross.
If you had a twin in your life, you saw, it's super weird, man.
Like, it doesn't take a lot of thinking to realize that that is hella gross.
And so offensive that just, yeah. Yeah.
Have you guys watched the show High Maintenance?
No.
Is that the guy that sells weed in New York on his bicycle?
And it's hilarious.
I've not seen it.
There's an episode where this woman goes to, you know, she's having a fling and it's these two guys. And it was crazy. And they show a lot, right? And in the morning, they get on the phone and they're brothers.
Oh, gross.
And she's like, are you guys talking to your mom? And wait, hold. And when it hits her, you know, the look on her face, like, yeah, it was gross.
No,
you should watch it.
No.
It's pretty funny.
So
yeah, well, with an endorsement like that,
yeah,
you know.
Sounds creepy.
Oh no, it's hilarious. Well, I have dark sense of humor.
So you guys
clearly
are gonna do possibly a live stream, maybe something live, and then what about the Harms? What are you gonna do for Hysterico?
The Harms. We are waiting for our music video, which is awesome.
Cool.
I don't know if you've heard of Amitav Plas. He's in town. Ami is amazing. He goes on Instagram. It's Ami Rocks. But Ami is this, how do I explain? He's an animator. He's working on some big project with Linkletter right now. That's why our stuff is just, we're not pushing him, right? So I think June we'll see that. And we'll be doing a show and a release party for that. So it'll include.
Yeah, yeah.
The Harms, Hysterico, the new song that's out.
Yeah.
His ideas for it were parable based, and I love it. I can't wait for you to see it.
That sounds great, man. Well, I love that song.
A video for this song too.
A video.
Apologies, go ahead.
What are you going to say?
This Big Blue, we're something's in progress. It's just not
oh, really?
Yet for this as well. And it'd just be after the release, which is tomorrow.
Fantastic. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We would just use everything as an excuse for another release.
Yeah.
That's another thing I've learned during the pandemic.
That's right.
Like, don't
you have to
be ashamed of that. Like everything.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, here's the video. Here's the live video. Here we're doing this in the studio. Check this out again. I mean, it's new. So.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
That's no shame.
You know what? It's interesting you say that because, Joe, I feel like when you play a song and you record a song and then you put out the song, you've heard it so many times, you forget that no one's ever heard it. And
yeah.
You're kind of over it. You know what I mean?
Right,
like you
right.
want to move on, but that's not how life works.
No.
And look at the Black Pumas Colors. They have played that song so many times in the last year. And when you get doing this long enough, you realize you want a song that you can handle playing over and over and over again. And that's why I'm extra proud, not to bring it back to me, but like, that's why I'm extra proud of This Big Blue, because I feel like it's that type of song where every aspect of it has been looked at, you know, the recording, the sound recording
right.
something we're really, really proud of. And much of it, thanks to Joe.
Yeah. Joe, you did a great job.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I tried.
Yeah.
Right.
Do you have
Sorry,
go ahead.
I just wanted to mention, I did do quite a bit of recording with various people during the pandemic.
You did?
And I'm excited for a lot of that stuff to start coming out.
More stuff that you produced?
No.
Or just stuff that you played
not
on?
Not that I produced. That,
yes.
Yeah. Worked in various capacities.
Hell yeah, man.
Yeah.
I think Joe's going to end up producing a lot, though.
Yeah. Well, I hope he does.
So. No.
Yeah.
His composition skills mixed with his actual experience in the studio have a lot to, you know, bear. He has a lot to offer.
Yeah. Yeah. This well, you guys did a great job with this stuff. And Chase, I was going to ask,
Thank you.
Have a website? An actual?
Yes. It's chasefrankmusic.com.
Okay.
And the Only You and This Big Blue both are premiering today on a couple different magazines.
Right. I saw that. Congratulations.
The montage that we did on the instrumental. JP Benzinski out of Long Beach is one of my favorite engineers. He did that. And
oh, cool.
I just love how he put that together.
Yeah.
It feels like you're there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, great job, you guys. People can go to chasefrankmusic.com. This will be coming out in a couple weeks. So the song's already out. Get out there and check it out. You can buy it on Bandcamp. Just go to chasefrankmusic.com and you'll find out when you guys are doing live stuff. Joe, any Hard Proof or Black Joe Lewis shows or one of the bazillion people you play with playing?
Yeah. Any kind of stuff? So there are some Black Joe Lewis things coming up. I think our next one is actually in Dallas at the Granada.
Oh, nice.
I want to say May 14th or something like that. But yeah, we've got dates. A lot of things are still kind of moving around a little bit. But yeah, we're going to be out there. We'll be out there.
Good. Well, man, it's great to see you again and talk to you again.
Likewise, man.
Chase, it was really, really nice to meet you. I love your solo stuff. I went through and listened to what you have on Spotify. And it's definitely different than This Big Blue, but it's great stuff. And the Harms, this song Hysterico is fantastic. So people can just get
Thank
out there
so
and dive into the Chase Frank world of music.
I have a lot of music. Yeah,
you do.
She does.
if you go to the Bandcamp, you can buy the whole thing for real cheap. It's just chasefrank.bandcamp.com. You know, I feel like I'm at a time where like it's the best it's going to be.
Yeah.
I don't know how else to say it, but like I've learned a lot. You know, I went to engineering school, I did all this stuff, but the catalog is really different. And I decided with my solo stuff that I would never let genre be like a dictating factor. And
Good.
that's wild sometimes.
Yeah.
So it might not all sound the same. You know what I'm saying?
Right. But
some
that's
of
good,
it sounds like early girl, like, you know, stuff. And
it's you're an artist, place. You know?
Correct.
Yeah. You're not confined by a style of music. You're just making stuff.
That's right.
Yeah. It's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well,
freedom.
That's right. Freedom. Freedom. Oh, freedom. I have to actually learn that song. Are you singing? Were you singing?
Motherless Child?
No, I thought you were singing. Yeah, no. No, I was singing.
Which one are you thinking?
George Michael, Freedom, 90.
Oh, freedom.
Yeah.
Freedom. Yeah. Freedom. That song's great, man.
Great
it's
song,
like
right?
a banger.
Right.
I was thinking of the Woodstock version of
right.
Sometimes I Feel Like a Motherless Child.
Yeah. I think there's people behind
that. Alone.
Well, thank you guys so much for doing the show. People get out there and check out This Big Blue and The Only You. And of course, all the rest of the music that these people make. You can find Chase at chasefrankmusic.com and links to there to all of your socials and Bandcamp and stuff.
Yes, yeah. sir. Thank
all right.
you, Johnny.
Well, thank you guys so much for doing the show. Have a great rest of the week.
All right.
Let
thank you so much.
Please.
Thank you. Congratulations on the new music.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Listen
to your thirst. You are the only you in this big
All right. That was Chase Frank and Joseph Woolard. You can find her at chasefrankmusic.com. And of course, Joseph Woolard is out playing shows. I saw Golden Darn Orchestra is playing in Houston or did play in Houston. Maybe he went down there and played with them. But people are out playing shows again. So go to chasefrankmusic.com. Find out more about Chase Frank. I want to thank Chase and Joseph for doing the show. Fantastic artists. This song, The Big Blue, is great. And The Only You, the instrumental version, gorgeous. Check it out at chasefrankmusic.com. And don't forget, gang, when you're out there going to chasefrankmusic.com, you can subscribe to this podcast wherever it is that you find podcasts, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Overcast, Stitcher. New shows all the time. All the time. Let's get down.